The following podcast is a production of Institutional Real Estate Incorporated. For the most comprehensive industry news and information, visit our website at irei.com and sign up for our free daily news alerts.
Welcome to Report from Europe. I'm Marek Hansel, the editor of Institutional Real Estate Europe, and I'm very pleased to say that today we have with us Ian Rickwood, who is the chief executive of Henley Investment Management. Ian actually founded Henley Investment Management in 2006, becoming the CEO at the same time, and he's grown the business into the broad investment real estate business that it is today. Henley is based both in the UK and the USA and has about, I think, $2.9 billion deployed across multiple sectors and geographies, according to the last count. Ian might correct me on that, but there we go. Prior to Henley, Ian was a former retail entrepreneur, and he's been involved in a lot of business prior to that as well. And anyway, we're going to talk today about the wider world of demographics and economics to identify the next opportunities in the real estate market as Ian sees them. So welcome, Ian. I hope that introduction was accurate enough. Did I get anything wrong there? Or was that okay?
Thanks, Mark. No, that was perfect. Better than I could have done myself. So thank you.
Brilliant. I think I also read that you were involved in bringing Subway to the UK. Whenever that was, is that correct, or am I making that up?
No, that is you are correct on that. That was a long time ago now. I think mid 1990s. So
wow, yeah, right, yeah. Subway have been suffering a bit in my neck of the woods, anyway. But that's a whole different story. Yeah, well, great. Well, thanks for your time today, Ian. I guess one of the big concerns everyone has at the moment is the current macroeconomic environment and the effects of inflation on real estate investments. I mean, how concerned are you there at Henley, and what are you doing about it? And how long do you think this problem of inflation may persist, in your view?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really interesting time, isn't it? And then sort of the overlay of that is the political situation as well. Which is particularly bad in the UK, but there are still plenty of other difficult political situations, both in Europe and indeed in the US. So it's a really interesting time, at the moment. I think we've sort of over the last year really struggled to acquire anything because we saw prices that look frothy. And, you know, whenever we did our underwriting, it became increasingly difficult to make sense of where prices were when we were looking further out. And I think, you know, the market now has reached the same conclusion, particularly since the summer, with the very large increase and back up in interest rates that we've seen since March. So I think at the moment, our general view is it's probably going to get more painful before it gets better. I think that, and we come on to talk about inflation in more detail in a second, but I think sort of in terms of overall economics, we would sort of be of a view that it's going to be a painful next 12 months. But coming out of that pain, at some point through next year, there's likely to be some really interesting entry points across most sectors of real estate and some in particular.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's... Yeah, that's interesting that you've been so reluctant to do any deals. And obviously, as you say, the majority of the market's caught up with you in that view now. And I guess it's going to stay like this for a while, right? Until things settle down.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, so we were debating here, what does this feel like? What does this economic period feel like in this sort of historical terms? You know, how does it stack up versus the GFC? How does it stack up versus the kind of mini blip that we had in the early 2000s that was more tech driven, or the 1990s, or even the 1970s. And the team here have been doing some work, looking at that and looking at the impact of sort of long run inflation on prices, on economy and on real estate. I think, if you look versus the GFC, it's quite interesting, talking at breakfast this morning with somebody about this. But if you think, back then we had very high leverage in the real estate sector and in corporate sector generally. we had some very opaque structures that we all remember, you know, the various you know, mortgage securities that were wrapped up and sliced. We had, however, when it all blew, when the whole thing blew up, and you know, we had Northern Rock and we had Bear Stearns, and then we had Lehman and even AIG in serious difficulty. I think the big difference back then was that governments were able to step in with, you know, deep pockets, and central banks were very supportive. You may remember interest rates were around 5%. They quickly crashed down to 1%. Inflation was low back then, probably 2-3%. And unemployment was around 5%. You know, you compare that to where we are today, and it's almost the reverse of some of those things. It's quite interesting. So today, much lower leverage in the system because, you know, banks never put the same amount of leverage back in since the GFC, which is a good thing. You know, you've got, however, this incredibly high inflation that we really haven't seen since the 1970s, and you know, maybe briefly we saw it in the early 90s, but really not, you know, not since the 1970s. Unemployment at record lows, you know, both here and in the US, not seen since the early 1970s. But the big difference is the central banks and the governments are really forcing this recession because they're so concerned about inflation. So it's the withdrawal of liquidity, it's the increase in interest rates, it's now going to be the tightening of fiscal policy that we're going to see globally that's going to be the catalyst for driving this recession. So it's almost the other way around to what we had in the GFC. So it's interesting to think through, therefore, you know, what's the playbook from here, you know, and how does that manifest itself across different sectors within within the economy?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's an interesting point. Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense around almost forcing the recessions for obvious reasons. Yeah, okay. Well, we should tell the listeners that Henley, as an investment house, you've invested in a wide range of assets, you know, office, industrial, hospitality, retail, residential, and alternatives, I think. So you've the whole sort of spread, if you like. So where are you seeing opportunities at the moment, or are you not seeing any at the moment? I did sort of notice that you, particularly when it comes to your value add and opportunistic strategies, that you sort of have the acronym is ADD, ADD, and an ADD strategy, which stands for arbitrage, distress, or dislocation. So is that now? Are you now pushing that into play at the moment and looking for opportunities in your value add opportunistic plays? I can never say that. or are you sort of still waiting in the wings, if we like?
I think we're getting close to that point. Our general view at the moment is that we are able to. You know, we have a core business that's in a very specialist area, providing housing to vulnerable adults, which is a very long term income. Based fund, and we are able to deploy there still. That kind of looks through the cycle, ignores the cycle. It's got inflation proofing within the product, and so it is well set to be able to continue and ignore the sort of, you know, kind of current 18-month turbulence that we've got. But on the other piece, the value add opportunistic. No, you're quite right. We are getting ready, I would say. I mean, if we look around at the moment, we're probably at this point seeing something like maybe as much as 25%, you know, price movement in some of the office space. We're seeing less in residential and in the shed space, but we are seeing, you know, we are seeing the first signs of some cracking there. I think the things that are probably going to drive the initial opportunities are going to be situations, you know, like refinancing. So if somebody's, you know, had a position, they've probably been running at a debt cost of maybe an all-in debt cost of probably 3-4% over the last few years, depending on precisely when they swapped and what the quality of the collateral is and therefore the margin by the funder. But let's say 3-4. That's likely to go out to 6 or 7 today. So that's a serious increase. You know, it means things like interest cover ratios are suddenly going to be very, very stressed. And so it'll be very interesting what the banks do as a result. We know that in the GFC, a lot of banks, you know, you remember the phrase extend and pretend was used.
Right.
And sort of people sat on their hands and because they didn't really want to take the assets back and they were cash flowing. And when they were cash flowing, they were happy to therefore allow for time to try and heal the damage. This time it may be different because the leverage is lower for the banks. So if they do choose to foreclose on a covenant default, then they've got the headroom to be able to do so and to be able to sell it back into the market and get the loan repaid. So that may create a different dynamic for those who are coming into refinancing, who see a significant increase in their debt. We think that could be interesting over the next 12 months. We think there's obviously, you know, the continuing pressure that occurs for some of the open-ended funds, who when they get rapid redemptions, which tends to happen when all asset prices, you know, not just real estate, but you know, equities in particular fall. And we know that puts a lot of pressure on, and then they're gated. And then it's really a question of how quickly that selling pressure recedes, and either they're able to, you know, clear out the redemptions from cash, or they're forced to sell. And we're not sure yet what that's going to look like, but that may well become additional pressure in the market over the next 12 months. And then I think as well, some of the sort of private equity funds who are at the end of life maybe have already triggered an extension, particularly if they were coming to end of life in 2020 when COVID hit. They may now have triggered the extensions. Maybe they had two plus ones or, you know, something like that. And as they reach the end of the road on that, it will be interesting to see whether that forces some sellers back into the market. So I think there's a number of particular things that could provide opportunity and could push sellers into the market at reduced prices. And so we're very much sort of watching that at the moment and seeing what happens. I think from a timing point of view, it's probably most likely going to start to occur in the first half of next year, as people probably get their positions, you know, clear in their mind through the balance of this year. And I suspect the action will probably start to happen more clearly through the first half of next year.
Yeah. Sort of picking up on your point, you did sort of say we're seeing a few cracks in industrial logistics, I think you mentioned, Ian, which sort of piqued my interest because obviously vacancy rates in many markets, regions are low when it comes to warehouses, to sheds. So is that purely, are you seeing that purely because of the refinancing point that you made, or is there something else going on there in that sector?
No, I think it's predominantly due to where interest rates have gone. You know, cap rates on logistics fell to incredibly low levels, particularly post-COVID, as people saw, you know, that as a more protected area, through the pandemic and post with the growth in online sales. And so cap rates got down to levels really that had never been seen before. and as ever, you're going to have, you know, some very high quality stock that's pretty robust and can withstand that. And you're going to have more stuff as it got frothy at the margins that now starts to look very expensive. And I think as people try to refinance some of those positions, you know, if you're in a cap of 3%, even lower in some cases, for some of that logistics, and you're now refinancing at, you know, 5, 6, 7%, you know, that's suddenly an incredibly difficult position to find yourself in. And so either it's going to demand more equity to push down the level of debt that's, you know, the assets that the asset has, or it's going to require some people having to sell. So that's what we're starting to see. I wouldn't want to overplay that at this point. I think the fundamentals are still incredibly strong for the sector. So it will be situational, you know, rather than sector wide. But I do think there are going to be, you know, situations and opportunities that that do occur within that space. Yeah, I think office in some ways maybe there may be more pressure on office because there's even more probably negative dynamics in the office space than the shed space. There's still a big debate going on, I think, in investors' minds around, you know, post pandemic, what does the office need to look like? With people working from home now. Is that a permanent change? Is that gradually going to change? How does the recession impact that? How much space do people really need? What's the type of space that they actually want when people come in? Again, we were talking the other day that because you get this sort of compressed nature where lots of people perhaps are only in for 3 or 4 days, the days that they're in the office, there's huge demand for meeting rooms, perhaps more than there used to be, you know, when those meetings were spread out over a 5-day week. So I think that's changing the usage of space, for occupiers. And so I think people are working through what does that mean. And then secondly, you've got the whole legislative program, you know, around EPC rating and the demands on landlords to, you know, make sure that that the various gradings are met within the windows that are coming up. And I think that's going to put pressure on secondary. So I think, you know, our general view is office is going to split. The higher quality side is going to do, you know, it's going to continue to be in demand. And if it's CapEx and left in good condition, will continue to be popular and will probably generate better rents, you know, probably, you know, keeping more in line with inflation. And the secondary, you know, office space is going to really struggle through this period. That's what we, you know, expect to see.
Yes. Yeah. I heard, I'm sure you've heard this as well, Ian, but people we're talking about here, particularly in the UK for our listeners elsewhere, but because of the rise in energy bills, the costs of heating your homes, we'd see more people going into the office during the week here, prepared to pay the commuting costs just to not have to put the heating on. But I'm not sure how strong that thesis is. But there you go. Yeah, I mean, I know what you mean about the office. The debates seem to change every few months, and the angles seem to, people come up with different angles. It's very interesting to observe.
I think so, and I think that what we've been able to see so far is some situations where there has been a need for somebody to sell the asset, and we have already seen a few deals where the price of the asset has fallen, probably, as I mentioned earlier, up to 30% from where it would have been priced, you know, just 12 months ago. That becomes a very interesting opportunity. As long as there is a story that works for long-term occupation, you know, the watch out I think here is, just because something's cheap doesn't necessarily make it a good buy. So we need to be very careful, and the market needs to be very careful, that if distress does appear, not all distress is necessarily good. Something may be distressed and be distressed for a very long time. So being mindful about precisely what one's buying, I think is going to be very important, particularly in the office space, because of the dynamics that we just talked to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. That leads us nicely into my sort of final question for you, Ian, which is how you go about identifying the best areas to invest in there at Henley. Obviously, I did mention your sort of ADD strategy earlier, and people talk about mega trends a lot, don't they? And looking beyond the cycle, and what have you. Could you give us a few little insights into how you go about thinking about the real estate market?
Yeah, as an investor over the last 15 years, we've tended to be quite pioneering into the areas that we've gone when searching for higher level of return. So our track record is, you know, reasonably stellar with an IRR of average IRR of around 20% and around about a 1.7 money multiple. So a good track record, being very focused on this arbitrage, distress or dislocation. And those opportunities of, you know, as the cycle progresses, have moved around. So we looked in different parts of the real estate markets. So the whole, I mentioned earlier, the fund that we've got, which is in the supported housing sector. Well, that was an area that we started really as pioneers in creating back in 2012. And, you know, saw the opportunity that was there and that the need that was there, and were happy to deploy capital early when it wasn't established. And then from that, have grown that into a fund business. As we look out today, we are still doing a lot of homework on where we think the best arbitrage opportunities are likely to present, and the distressed opportunities are likely to present as we go into next year. So I would probably want to keep my powder slightly dry at the moment on that, although perhaps I've given some clues as to where we think that.
Sure.
In terms of alternatives, you know, one thing we are doing as a business, so we are still investing through this cycle. When we find a niche that looks really interesting and more recession resilient, then we're happy to deploy capital. And we're doing so in the US at the moment in the car wash space. That people always think of Breaking Bad. Not the reference I want people to think of. I understand that. But no, we have, you know, just a really interesting space at the moment where there is some institutional capital trying to get into it. But there are no real platforms. So just kind of very headline numbers in the US, there's sort of 60,000 different car washes across the whole of the US. It's obviously a large car owning community. And that really splits into three. It's the kind of Breaking Bad hand wash manual clean.
Right.
It's the ones that you get at the garage fork, or, you know, where you go in one at a time and it takes 5 or 6 or 7 minutes and
it's
a sort of medium job. And then the space that we're in is the sort of growth space in the US, which is called the tunnel, which is much higher tech tunnels that are kind of 150 foot long, which will do multiple cars in one go on a conveyor belt. And, you know, kind of 90 to 120 second wash, so very, very quick. But the big difference between those and the others is, as opposed to being a cash business, they're actually a membership-driven business, you know, like your Netflix. So they're a monthly membership-driven business. So very high recurring revenue, removing all of the seasonality, and very high EBITDA, high margin business, but a real alternative and a really interesting propco-opco play. With, you know, significant CAGR, a large market. And in that 60,000 car washes I mentioned, the single biggest brand in the whole of the US has about 450 car washes. So it's so incredibly fragmented, high CAGR and a $22 billion market. It's the kind of place that feels and looks ripe for consolidation. So something like that we would look at investing through the cycle when we see, you know, such a, you know, such an interesting opportunity. That looks more recession resilient, you know, and less price volatile perhaps than the more core real estate assets. So that's really how we think about it. It's you know, looking for perhaps, you know, things that are slightly niche that other people haven't looked at, and applying our brains and thinking there is where we tend to try and spend our time.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's fascinating. The car wash thing. We're sort of. Sounds almost as if it's at a sort of earlier stage than perhaps self-storage in some European markets in particular, where it's very fragmented and people have tried to go in there into self-storage. But
yeah, I think the alternatives are always an interesting place to go, I think, you know, because, you know, the weight of capital hasn't yet arrived there and you're still into defining the marketplace. And so if the fundamentals look good, I think it's always interesting to go and find those parts of the market. That's I think where you can create additional return.
Well, fantastic. Well, it's been really good to talk to you, Ian, and we've covered a lot, and I really appreciate your time. Thank you, and I hope our listeners have found it interesting. I don't know if there's any words of wisdom you want to end with, Ian, but I've been very happy talking to you, and it's been a great conversation. So thank you.
No, I've enjoyed it too. Thank you. And I suppose for all of us at the moment, it's a case of gritting our teeth a bit and getting through this. And I'm sure the good times will come again soon.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Let's hope so. Great stuff. Well, thank you, Ian, and hope to speak to you again soon.
Thanks, Sam. Bye-bye.